All right, welcome back, everybody. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live on 97.1 Free FM. Arsenio Hall is with us.
What's up? You know what?
The Arsenio Hall Show.
Let's see, we've talked about a lot of crazy stuff, but like right now, and I don't even know how to explain it, I feel really good.
Is that right?
I feel real positive, real good.
What are you drinking?
Now, this is water.
Oh.
This is water, but I just realized something about the human spirit and love and kindness. But I don't know if that's going to come out in the next hour.
I don't know. It may or may not.
And I don't know if our audience will receive what I'm talking about.
And our city hall does not smoke weed, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's put it like this. This is the best I've ever felt without weed.
That's a huge compliment. All right. Let's introduce the people here. Of course, everybody knows Jim Gott from the L.A. Dodgers. Nice to see you, Jimmy.
Great to see you guys, boy.
Oh,
and Arsenio. Wow, yes. What an honor it is to be here with
good
you guys.
Good guy.
Jim Gott was with the L.A. Dodgers. He was also with Toronto and Pittsburgh and San Francisco, I believe, at some point.
Yeah.
Every time you got to a team,
they went
to postseason and won the championship.
After I left. It was usually that. That was the missing ingredient that Jim Gott was on the team, and then when I left, they were awesome.
You know what, Jim?
Incredible teams.
The Arsenio Hall Show didn't take off until I left. When John Stewart took it, it went crazy.
And Bruce Lee also. We're right in that same line with those guys.
There it is.
All right, let's also introduce Philip here. And Philip Hain, he is the... I guess the executive director
of Autism Speaks, Los Angeles chapter.
Autism Speaks, look at that, and Walk Now for Autism.
And this is a champion too, boy.
Yes.
Both these guys here,
and this is your son Andrew.
Yep,
Andrew, how are you, sir?
I'm great, and I'm so happy to meet Arsenio.
All right, excellent.
Thanks, man.
And this is a great time of year for the awareness of autism. It is Autism Awareness Day, I believe. Isn't
yes,
that right?
World Autism Awareness Day.
Wow. All right. And Autism Awareness Month, and it keeps rolling on here. You guys raise a lot of money and a lot of awareness for autism. And having a big deal out in April
26th
at the Rose Bowl.
Walk Now for Autism.
And it's really gotten big. The first year that we were involved in it was at Dodger Stadium, and there's probably about 2,000 or 3,000 people.
Exactly.
And now it's at the Rose Bowl, and there's like 30,000 or 40,000 people that show up.
Don't I wish. Well, we're going to expect about 15,000, so it'll be quite a crowd there, definitely.
40,000, right?
Yeah. Okay, sure. Whatever you say.
Tim, you gotta let me ask this question, okay? And I'm probably going to sound like an idiot, but that's how we grow and learn.
Right.
Being vulnerable. We hear about autism constantly, especially like in the last decade, I've become more aware of it. But I'm not sure how many of us really, really know how to define autism.
Yeah. All right, Phil, how do you define it?
It's a neurodevelopmental disorder that really affects a person's ability to communicate, socialize. There may be a lot of verbal challenges with some people. It's a spectrum. So you've got people who are highly intelligent, PhDs. You've got people who are nonverbal and have severe challenges that need to live in group homes. So quite the range of behaviors that affect how people communicate and deal with each other and deal with society and sensory issues and all that.
Yeah, I think I fall into that category then. We were at the Rose Bowl.
Me too.
Yeah, I think everybody's got it.
I live in a group home.
But we were at the Rose Bowl a couple of years ago, and Dave Clark was with Channel 9. He was out there, and somebody introduced Dave Clark. He goes, and Dave Clark said, "But I'm Dave Clark, right?" And I kept saying that, "I'm Dave Clark." And one of the women out there says, "So how long have you had that?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, you're right. This is the wrong place to keep doing that. I forgot about that. No, it's actually just Asperger's. It's not quite autism. I'm getting there though. I'm working my way into
all
it.
Part of the spectrum.
Yes, but one in every 150 kids is affected by it, right?
Right, one in every 150, and four times as many boys as girls are affected by autism.
All right, go guys.
Yeah.
And I've got autism too, and I'm loving it.
All right, and how old are you, Andrew?
I'm 15.
15 years old. All right.
Yes.
And you're going to be out at the big walk on April 26th, I imagine?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Excellent.
Except knowing you, you'll probably have a Segway. I'm not walking.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I read recently online, and this is just like a preliminary study, that when kids have autism, one of the ways that you can control you know, some of the behavior is to raise the kid's cholesterol. Have you heard that?
I have not heard that.
Yeah, it was like a weird study.
That was Oprah's theory, though.
I think McDonald's did the study.
It might be with Andrew because he loves macaroni and cheese, so he's probably a prime candidate.
And I also love meeting celebrities like I am tonight.
Yo, but Andrew, suppose you and a celebrity got to eat some macaroni and cheese. Well, that's the ultimate. Put them both together. So I'm gonna try to figure out a way to make sure that you and Tom Cruise can have some mac and cheese or something.
But here's one thing. The one celebrity that I'm trying to get to the walk is Miley Cyrus from Hannah, Montana.
Ah, well, maybe she's listening right now. You know, who knows?
I hope so, too.
I think she lives out in the valley.
I know her dad, but he won't answer my calls.
He won't?
You know, he's got an achy, breaky heart.
Yeah. Check it out. I knew him when he needed to drop that achy, breaky single, you know, on my achy, breaky late night show, you know. So he better return my call because we need him at Dodger Stadium. Is that it?
Rose Bowl.
It's at the Rose Bowl. And we need him to bring his daughter.
Absolutely. Yeah,
of course. Yeah.
But if I were like the owner of McDonald's or the CEO, I would put that in the front window. Yeah. If your kid's acting up. Big Mac, French fries, and a Coke. Bring them in.
That's how I keep my autism in check. My cholesterol is high. And
yeah, mine's high, too. Mine's around 300. I'm trying to do it naturally before I take any drugs for it.
I had a problem, but Chicken McNuggets took care of it. You know. Yeah.
I used to have Chicken McNuggets, but now I eat burgers.
Good for you. All right, Jim Gott is with us, a professional athlete. And Jim Gott played for many years with Los Angeles Dodgers. And you were on the club. Were you on the club between the 81 and the 88 World Series?
No, after.
After the 88 World
Series.
I was
with the Blue Jays in the early 80s, got traded to the Giants when they were awful.
Right.
And then they went to the playoffs later after I left. And then I went to the Pirates. The Pirates were awful. And then they got really good in the mid-90s when I came over with the Dodgers. I was the Dodgers 90 to 94.
Years. In Pittsburgh, was that the We Are Family years?
Just missed those guys. And then I was right at the time. Barry Bonds was just a young, great left fielder. And a lot of no-name guys. Barry wasn't really known by that time. Bobby Bonilla, Doug Drabeck. We had a bunch of young kids, and Jim Leland, the manager of the Tigers, put us together, and we had some great teams after that.
I'd like to apologize for him making the Sister Sledge reference. but keep talking. I'm sorry.
I would love to have been on those teams. Yeah, those guys were awesome.
Was Parker on that team?
Remember that guy? His arm out in right field, throwing guys out. And Willie Stargell, Omar Moreno, Tim Foley. I mean, they were incredible.
I think Willie Stargell just passed recently.
Is that right?
Yeah, he did.
Now, was that before Barry Bonds started working out?
Barry was about 175, 180 pounds.
And now he's like 190?
He's like 190.
His head is 190. Barry and Bobby Bonilla were the killer bees.
They were. That's right. And Sid Bream was in there also. We had a great team. Jay Bell was there. Right. Good job, Arsenio.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Baseball history.
Now, Jim, what is the fastest you ever threw a ball?
I was clocked one time over 100.
Is that
but
right?
I was normally in 90, mid-90 area.
Jesus
And I was
Christ.
Very wild, so everybody kind of knew just to step back and, you know, if my breaking balls weren't good, they made sure that they get in there and they were able to time my fastball. But
100 miles an hour.
I can throw 200 miles an hour, but it's nowhere near the plate.
You know, that's why I don't understand and why when you guys hit a batter, why they would approach the mound. If you can throw a ball 100 miles an hour, can't you punch 90 miles an hour?
That's a good point.
And what makes a man drop his bat before he goes to fight?
Exactly.
I'm from Cleveland. I take my bat with me.
Well, you're hoping that you have reinforcements. You don't need the bat because you've got 24 other guys hoping to be right behind you.
We've had
this talk before. There was nothing better than being able to do that. And I think if there's anything that I miss from not playing now is just the ability to be able to put somebody in their spot. I can't do that in the regular world. I can't like pull somebody over because
it's frustrating.
Cut me off and be able to pull a ball out of the back of my car and drill them right in the side. There's just no greater moment
now,
than that.
Now, could you still today throw a ball in the 70s, 80s?
No. I would need to drive it 70 and then just drop the ball in them and hope that would hurt. Yeah. Oh, boy. I've thrown a couple times to my kids. My son Nicholas, who's an unbelievable swimmer, his little league team's the last few years, and I get in there and the kids are, Mr. Gott, and they're seeing it, I'm throwing my best, and they're like, come on! By the end, they're just taking full swings off me.
Jim,
it's very humiliating.
You know, when you hit someone, Has anyone on your team ever gotten angry because they know not somebody on your team has to get hit?
Oh, not me, but that has happened. It usually has happened with the younger guys on the team once they're first come up to the big leagues and something doesn't go right. Some guy takes a big swing off of them or they don't like what's happening out there and they just throw not an errant one, but a purpose pitch inside. Boy, I've had a lot of veteran guys where they'll sit that guy down and realize, you watch what's going to happen right now. You watch. And right. So he'll make those guys just focus in on, you know, the next pitches that happen when their team goes up to bat. And, you know, it's okay to retaliate, but it's not okay to instigate.
Right. And who had the best control in the major leagues that you ever saw? Pitching wise.
You know, Greg Maddux is pretty incredible.
Is that right?
John Franco. You know what? One of my favorite guys in the whole world, Lee Smith with the Chicago Cubs. This guy could throw unbelievable, hugest man alive coming out there. Right. And it would always be, he'd always be coming out at the ballpark when it was 5 p.m. The shadows are there.
It's
halfway
over.
There, right when he's letting go of the ball, it's going into the shadow, which makes his 95 mile an hour fastball a million five.
Right.
And he had great slider. And that was what made him so great. He didn't have the greatest second pitch, but his ability to be able to pick the plate and throw strikes, the umpires all knew it, the hitters all knew it, so he was able to kind of inch his way out of the strike zone a little bit and get strikes.
So if you had, Maddux had great control. If you set up, like, four coffee cups on the corner of each plate, you know, you put, like, a 2x4 and a coffee cup on each corner, he could nail them every time?
Every time.
Every single time.
And you know what? You can say this also. Two things. A major league pitcher being able to do that with the coffee cups would be able to do that a high percentage, over 50, 60% of the time. Almost everybody in the big leagues can do that. And the other thing is that everybody in the big leagues can hit that 95 mile an hour fastball.
Is that right?
Every single, that's what everyone can do.
Now word gets around. Again, Arsenio Hall is with us. Also, Philip Haim from Autism Speaks and Walk Now for Autism. And his son, Andrew, joins us. And also,
yes.
Jim Gott. Now, when you had, if you're in the major leagues, right, and a guy comes up and he's doing very well. He gets like 3 home runs in his first week. He's really, you know, kicking ass. Does the word get around, like he can't, for instance, he can't hit a curveball. Does the word get around the league pretty quickly?
Very quickly.
And you know that
right away. I mean, you will know that after the second day. And if you fall into that category where you will leave a pitch over the plate and a young kid like that is able to hit 2 or 3 in a row or get doubles or whatever it is and it's that hot, they will figure out what it is right away, and that is all he will get. The fastball that he can hit, that will be up towards his hands or way out over the plate so he can see that timing.
Right.
And then the thing that he can't hit is what's going to be out over the plate, and he's going to have to prove that before.
And so I imagine that gets a lot of young kids thrown out of the league.
Right.
When you guys know what he's going on.
Boy, you see guys that come up that are these flashes in the pans. It has nothing to do with their great ability. It's just their ability to do it over game after game after game. That's what makes a great major league hit.
Right. Now, do you watch a lot of film, or does the guy tell the coach tell you?
Watch a lot of film, and it's really interesting. Next time you're out at Dodger Stadium, they have 2 at the end of the dugouts, 1 in center field, and 1 at the very top. And there's a toggle switch that's inside the Dodger video room,
right,
where they're able to focus in exactly on or left-handed batter, over the top, the side, all of these different things. And, you know, ball players were not the most mature people. And realized that we could those toggle switches at different times during the game to be able to scan the crowd or be able to do all kinds of different things. So you can imagine the pictures that were printed that came out after that. The funny story is when I met my beautiful wife, Kathy, before I had a chance to really talk to her, came off the field, introduced her. One of the pitchers that day, the starting pitcher that day, had a chance to hit, went up and met Kathy and Michelle Fox, who was the community relations person at the time. And so I come walking off. I'm like, oh, my God, I just met the most beautiful girl in the world. And I come walking through. This guy comes up to me and says, hey, got her. Leave my girl alone. And I said, what do you mean? And he shows me the toggle switch picture of Kathy standing there. And he was just getting ready to, I'm going to win the game for you. And
Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah.
You almost lost her then.
I did almost lose her.
To a toggle
before
switch.
Before I even had her, but to a toggle switch, exactly.
All right, Arsenio Hall, Jim Gott are with us, also Philip Haim and Andrew Haim as well. Now, Jim, when you were pitching for the Dodgers or for one of the many teams, who's the toughest out? Who's the guy you came
early
up with?
Early in my career, it was these guys that are in the Hall of Fame, George Brett, Rod Carew, and then as my career I came over to the National League, it was Tony Gwynn is probably, and Eddie Murray.
So Tony Gwynn owned
too.
You?
Owned me.
Yeah.
And he's all over me. I saw him at spring training one time, and God, you always got me out. I look back on the thing. The guy's hitting 500 against me. And I think it's because he hit 750 against everybody else that he was like, George Brett said the same thing. God, you got me out. And I'm thinking, what? All I remember is backing up bases when you're out there. Jeez.
Now, were you in the league during the George Brett, the tar incident?
I was.
Were you in the American League at the time?
I was in the American League with the Blue Jays at the time, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember
he was
him.
A fiery guy.
Oh, yeah.
Buck Martinez was our catcher who became a manager of the Blue Jays, and he just said, hey, this guy's the greatest hitter you'll ever see, but you know what? If there's one thing you can do, you can get in his head, and early in the count, you either knock him back or keep throwing fastballs in on him, and that will just tap into his pride, and that will get him off his game. And I learned that really early in my career. I didn't follow it because he still hit 500 off me, but right. That was the one thing. There were a couple of key times where I just kept pounding him inside when he was looking for something away, and he was like, okay, you know, puffed up his chest and went in there and tried to be Reggie Jackson instead of, you know, right. The great contact hitter that he was.
Yeah, and so George Brett and also Gwynn, they would get...
Tony?
Yeah, Tony Gwynn. When they came up against you, did you think, you know, I just hope they don't hit it out of the park. I hope they just get a single.
You know what? I think that just make contact, because that's what those guys could do. I'm telling you, though, we were all really great players, but there was always, I mean, Barry Bonds is one of them. Daryl Strawberry is one of them. Eddie Murray. And then these two guys, Gwynny and Brett, that they could hurt you. They knew the game so well and had such incredible bat speed that they could hurt you what was appropriate at the time.
I also heard that George Brett, when he would hit a ball, he could tell how many seams hit the bat on that ball. Is that true?
You know, people talk about stuff like that, but
that's
one of those things.
Tale?
That it has to be. There's no way.
You hear about batters with vision, and they can actually see
on.
The spin.
They're doing the Matrix of slowing down. Yeah.
They see better than other batters.
Even
they're
kids
just great.
Can do it. Yeah. Even kids can do that. Try to hit it out of the park.
You can't do that, you know?
Out of the park, man.
And, you know, when I would go to Dodger Stadium, and I haven't been there this year, but I understand they've done some new improvements.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. Oh, the McCourts have been
but
awesome.
I used to love going out to the outfield and watching the pitchers, the Dodger pitchers, warm up. And you could hear that ball hitting the catcher's glove from, you know, a mile away.
You can.
Doesn't that eventually screw up a catcher's left or right hand, whatever he's catching with?
It can, yeah. But you know what happens is that they're so used to it that they realize they might have one or two different gloves, and one is a more padded glove for the Nolan Ryans of the world, and one's a softer glove for somebody that doesn't throw as hard. But they just get used to it.
They're still catching 180 pitches at 100.
You know, absolutely. These guys still, their hands, I can't tell you how many times seeing guys, even in the middle of the season, Mike Socha, you know, Bob Brenly, whoever it was catching, that they would come in and they were icing their hands down after the games. If a guy had a particularly hard... throwing hard. And here's the thing, too, is that you had guys that threw 95, but the guys that were really, really hard to hit were not the really live fastball ones, but it was the guys that they threw a heavy ball, they called it. And Nolan Ryan was one. I got a chance to hit off Nolan Ryan a couple times. I struck out the three times that I faced him, but I fouled one pitch off, and I felt as if I had just swung a sledgehammer and hit the hardest possible thing. My hands were throbbing.
Wait, now what makes it a heavy? It's not the
it's
speed,
just,
the heavy
you
ball?
Know what? It's just the way that they throw it. Dwight Gooden had this incredibly live fastball, and it's just flying all over the place. Uh-huh. Nolan Ryan's just comes in and just thuds. Oh. So it's more of a sinker. His is more of a sinker than the rising fastball. So
now, but weren't you pissed off that they were throwing their A-list stuff to you?
You know what? I'm sure it wasn't their
it
A-list
wasn't.
Stuff. I was a pitcher. I was awful. I swung at everything. I hit a couple home runs right off the bat.
Really?
When I got traded over from the Blue Jays to the Giants the first month, I think I had three starts in the big leagues. Third start, I played against the Cardinals at Candlestick. Bob Force was pitching. Two-one fastballs that he threw me, I hit out of the ballpark.
Wow.
Same game. And
that
spread around really quickly.
How pissed off was he?
Oh, he was ragged the rest of his career. Every time that they came in and did the scouting report, how about God? How do you face God? We're talking about how it got around, and I struck out 16 times in a row after that because nobody threw me a fastball. And I was swinging. I'm up there to swing three times. That's it. I'm not waiting for anything. Three pitches, whether it's bouncing or over my head or in the
swinging.
Strike zone, I'm swinging.
But so wait a minute. Even the word got around about
a pitcher,
you?
Absolutely.
Is that right?
Oh, and I'm not you know, I'm making myself sound like I was really something special, but I wasn't. But, you know, they just knew that they
and don't
throw
another
a fastball.
Fastball.
Don't throw him a fastball. Why? I'm going to swing anyway.
No, wait. Now, Tim said something before you arrived about the word special. To play any pro sport, don't you have to be special? I mean, you talked about how great they are.
Right.
When you make it to be, you got to be special, you know, just minor league.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You know, and I can say that in every other walk of life. Look at what you've done. I mean, that you're very special in what you've done, Arsenio Tim.
Thank you.
The things that you've been able to do. Gina, the incredible talent that she is as a producer of the show. I mean, really, honestly, at the top of the game, you still have to have that. But
I physically pleasured Bud Friedman once and got on at the improv, and the rest was history. That doesn't take talent.
Hey, one thing that I do when we get a chance I'd love to talk about is that I'm here because I have two children with autism, and I have a 20-year-old. I just got back from an awesome trip that CJ and I took to Washington, D.C., just a beautiful kid on the lower functioning scale. Just had a wonderful time with him, and then my son Danny, who's just an incredibly gifted, bright kid that's 14 years old.
Excellent. Now, you're going to be out at the walk this year?
Of course.
Okay.
Love it out there. Love you being out there. Arsenio, we got to...
Oh, yeah.
When you bring the Cyruses, then we will hold you up.
Will you be mad if I show up without any white people? No?
Shut up.
Because I don't know if they're going to answer my call, man.
All right, gang. It is April 26th at the Rose Bowl. Again, Philip Hayne is with us. Also, Andrew and Jim Gott. Arsenio Hall continues. And you guys can all stay for another couple segments, huh?
Is that okay?
All right, excellent. Absolutely. Yeah, we'd love to. Absolutely. All right, this is the Tim Conway Jr. Show. We're live at 97.1 Free FM.
Hey, call Tim Conway Jr. now. 520-9710.
520-9710.
The Tim Conway Jr. Show on 97.1 SoCal's FM Talk Station.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live on 97.1 Free FM. Arsenio Hall joins us all evening. And
I paid him probably too much.
Yeah,
I gave him too much money in envelope.
You don't have to pay him anything.
Also, we have Philip Hayne with us, and he is with Autism Speaks and Autism Now, Walk Now for Autism. Yeah. And that's walknowforautism.com.
.org.
.org.
It says
.com.
.com.
And of course, this is a World Autism Awareness Day.
The first ever.
Not to be confused with April, which is Autism Awareness Month.
Correct. Yeah. And one of the great pitchers of all time, ladies and gentlemen, Jim Gott joins us.
In my house, my kids.
Jimmy.
You know, they're still wondering. There's Jimmy. This awesome book, The Greatest Baseball Players of All Time, Sports Illustrated. My son, Nicholas, God bless him, looking through it. Dad, where are you? And I said, you know what? They had to make the cut somewhere, and I was right there, 101. As far as they're concerned, I'm the 101st greatest ball player ever.
Right. Well, I enjoyed the years that you were on the Dodgers. I really did.
We had some good teams. Boy, you know, the 94 team was the best I was ever on. Eddie Murray
had gone already.
You went to playoffs
in 94, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
But
we lost the World Series. There was the strike.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
started in the middle of August. We were in first place. We had an awesome team, and that was the closest that I came to the playoffs.
Wow. But what's it like to turn on the TV and see Joe Torre in a blue
How awesome
LA
is that?
Yeah, that is wild.
And you know what? It started back when he originally signed with the team back last fall, and I can remember the day that they announced it. The McCourts were awesome showmen. They just had the...
They did it in Dodger Stadium on the field.
At Dodger Stadium,
it was
on the field. I mean, it gives me goosebumps right now that we were talking Dodger baseball in November of last year, and I think that that's really carried over. The team is looking great. I'm hoping that somebody might throw up the score of the game. It was 1-0 when I got here.
Yeah,
on the way in today, undefeated. I think that Joe Torre is going to be just an incredibly calming influence on the team. And
the only sad part about this conversation, Tim, is that Cleveland's going to the World Series this year.
Well, we'll play them, which would be even great.
They're bringing it home.
See, that would be hard for you because you're an Angeleno now, and yet a you know.
Yeah, but
Cleveland
I got the heart of a dog, Jim.
Oh.
The heart of Cleveland forever.
Why is it so sad?
Tim and Jim.
It's awful, yes.
The game's actually 1-1, but it got delayed.
Oh, okay. So
it's in the bottom of the fifth.
Boring. Boring out there. Oh, my gosh. Speaking of those dogs, when we were playing in there, we would go into Cleveland in September, and the Browns had already started playing. Mm-hmm. And you know what? They didn't care about the Indians. The Indians were awful at that time, but the Browns were everything. And we'd go in there, and there were trenches out there in the grass and the natural turf out there because of the rain, and then these huge 300-pound football guys just making just holes everywhere.
Oh, that was Cleveland Stadium before Jacobs
yeah.
Field.
Oh, yeah. The mistake by the lake. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I go way back. I was back when...
Yeah,
a long time
I remember
ago, yes.
Going to a game there in Cleveland. It was late in September when Cleveland was about 27 games out, and the Oakland A's came in. The Oakland A's were about 29 games out, and I went down there with a friend of mine in the stadium, and it was raining that night. It was like drizzling, and they weren't sure if they were going to play the game or not. I swear to God, there were 20 people there. There were more people in the dugouts than there were in the stands.
And you remember that. Go ahead.
And they only had one concession stand open.
Oh.
One concession stand. And the depression in that stadium. I mean, not in the fans, because the fans were all drunk. We were all sitting there drunk. But the players were so depressed to be there.
Oh, it just was hard to play there. I remember when we were there, Albert Bell, who used to be called, was he Juan Bell? I can't remember what he was born.
He used to live out in Sugar Falls, where my dad's from.
When there were 20 people out there, there was a group of like five guys that were at every single game, and they were all over Albert Bell because he couldn't do anything right. And screaming and yelling all season long. We're in there at last three games of the season. These guys, he's running out to his playing catch at his position. These guys are yelling. And one of the guys goes, "Hey, how about throwing me a ball, Albert, Juan, or whatever your name is, Bell?" And he turned around, got closer, and threw a pea, just a bullet missile, and hit the guy right in the chest.
Oh,
and nobody
man.
Said anything because the guy knew that he deserved it. And that was it.
All right. Now, Jim, again, Jim Gott is with us from the L.A. Dodgers, Arsenio Hall, and also Philip Haim and Andrew Haim. Now, who's the first guy that you hit that he came out to the mound to try to kick
Nobody
your ass?
Did, because they all knew that I was really wild. The one that scared me the most, Greg Luzinski. Remember the bull?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
He was with the Chicago White Sox, and I remembered him from Kai with his great years with the
Philadelphia,
Phillies.
Right, yeah.
So here we are, the guy before him, so who would it be? Can't remember who it was. The guy batting third hit a home run. Next guy, I don't get the thumb. The thumb is usually that it's time to pick him off. I just got the one fastball and put it towards his inside leg, which was the side where Luzinski was, fastball on the inside. So I just am so mad. I turned and threw it as hard as I could, hit Luzinski in the head. He had one of those half helmets, no flap, just the helmet. The helmet came off, went down. Luzinski looked at me like he was angrier than he's ever been, like a bull.
Right.
Nose and nostrils ready to go. Bent down, grabbed his helmet, put it on his head, and looked at me the whole way when he's running down to first. Dave Revering, my first baseman, "Hey, listen, this guy, he's a kid, 22 years old, has no idea what he's doing. Don't go kill him." So that was, I was afraid then.
Now, the thumb, was that on every team? You get the thumb pointing at him, that means to knock him down?
That was the knock him down. And it usually, again, you talk about when to do it and when not to do it. You usually knew. Everybody knew. So if one of your guys got drilled when he shouldn't have gotten drilled, there's number one. Number two, you go in high spike or really hard at your second baseman shortstop in a double play situation, there's number two. Number three, you're doing anything that you shouldn't be doing when you have a big lead.
Stealing
a base, swinging as hard as you possibly can, whatever, that is another reason to get nailed.
Wow. How often do signals between catchers and pitchers change?
If you've got the real crafty veteran or continues to get on second base, or if you've got that great first or third base coach that can really see what's going on. And some of these guys can see those signs from there? Oh, just the things and knowing, and they're also picking up the signs from the dugout. I mean, the elaborate sign giving is incredible. Most of the times it's not coming from the manager. The manager would be up there doing all of his thing with a hit and run situation. But you know what? It's the placement of the guy behind him.
Really?
Yes. Oh. If so and so is over his right shoulder, that's what's happening.
That's interesting.
Over the left
shoulder,
and so everybody's got their little code or cryptic thing that's happening.
So you have to keep on top of everything. The entire game.
Okay, you're talking to me. Am I coaching now or managing now or in baseball on the field? No. I mean, I was happy to be there. And you guys in the last hour were talking about ADD and ADHD.
Right. That's you?
Majority of the guys that I played with, same thing. I mean,
hyperactive.
Our ability to be the one thing that's great about ADD and ADHD people is our ability to hyper focus.
Right.
Our ability, once we've got something locked in, nothing distracts us. And now, so as a pitcher, that was the greatest thing. But you know what? Right. If it wasn't working that day, I'm hearing the guy selling peanuts or the guy yelling at me or somebody sneezing.
All right, so if you weren't focused, you could hear a guy yelling at you.
Oh, and I was so far off my game. I had no idea. I'm throwing balls over the backstop and hitting the mascot.
Did you ever take yourself out of a game?
No, but I was like... No.
But do you ever look at the dugout and think
like
yourself,
the worst possible thing you could do?
But do you ever look at the dugout and think to yourself, why aren't you coming
out
here?
What are you doing? I'm just, Socha would come out and Socha knew it. Socha's like, come on. He is awful today. You can't get anybody out.
The acronyms, the ADHD, all these acronyms we've been throwing around. What's the one that Howie Mandel has where you don't...
Oh, OCD.
Or no deal.
You know what? I got a little bit of that, too.
Oh, I did,
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
But you gave me the whole black handshake when we met. You gave me all five steps, everything.
Yeah, no. Even because I was hyper-focusing on you. I was so happy to meet you. Are you kidding me? I was right there.
Hey, now, is it... I heard that a couple of guys, and you don't have to mention names, and a couple on the Dodgers and around the league, but between innings... they would go down into the walkway there and smoke cigarettes. That happened quite often?
Yeah, well, Jim Leland was one. Oh, you know what? Okay, let's go way back. Ted Simmons, who was an incredible catcher for the Cardinals, that was what was able to help calm him down. And that was his self-medication, was just to be able to... I mean, it could be a million degrees on the turf in St. Louis, day game, catcher, sweating bullets, and yet he needed to go in and, you know, and smoke a cigarette and then hit a double and... Somehow
did
he's
he smoke
a young
every
guy.
Inning? Every
yeah. Jim Leland, same thing. And, you know, nowadays, again, that was more of a like a generational thing, too, that so many people are more concerned about health. And, you know, that's how this whole steroid thing came about. Guys were trying to enhance their ability to go out there and be fit and stay healthy throughout the season and be as strong as you can.
And recover quickly when you're
injured.
That's
the key to the steroids in baseball. In football, it's a completely different monster because you need to be a monster. You need to be aggressive and strong and that means a lot more. But in baseball, just your ability to play 162 games and be at the top of your game.
I get that with football. I get it with baseball. What's up with R&B stars doing... I just read an article the other day. I don't want to get sued. But a lot of... I guess it's to make you look better. But there are a lot of... music stars who are taking steroids now. It's become this designer new hip thing to
do. And it might be, again, the same thing with just the ability to recover quicker, whether you're out partying all night or whatever it is.
I guess if you're David Lee Roth or somebody, you can't jump like you used to. So.
Does steroids give you that ability to recover quicker?
That's the key.
Oh, that is?
That's the key to the whole thing, to maintain your strength and to recover quicker.
Now, real quickly, when you went to summer camp in Florida every year, did you always have to fight for your job?
I had plenty of times where I had to fight for my job. And one specifically, 92, signed a big contract, went down there. It wasn't guaranteed. A couple new guys coming in. There's a time thing that every Monday was the day that you either got your meal money or you were going into Tommy Lasorda's office.
Uh-oh.
And as you got closer to opening day in the Players Association basic agreement, 3 days before the opening, the first pitch of the season, they have to make that decision or your contract is guaranteed.
Right.
So 3 days before, 92 spring training, I've had an okay spring training. Another guy's had a really good spring training. Everybody's, you know, the hustle and bustle about this. And 2 o'clock on that Friday, there was a little celebration down in the bullpen. Nobody had any idea what was going on, but we were like, Jim, you got it.
You're
sweating bullets until that point because you don't know. General manager's not going to talk to you, but there's speculation everywhere. And, you know, that makes everybody happy, but didn't make me happy back then.
Yeah, no, I can imagine because.
And then injury and all those different things. You know, you just never know. And just like what we're talking about, just to be on top of your game, you're going to do everything you can and take this full circle. Do we need to grab something?
Yeah, we got
to
take a break here. Okay. But go ahead.
No, but I was just going to take it full circle is that, you know, because sports were easy for me and that's where I was able to have my social group was with that I just expected that to be that same thing with my kids. And my my daughter, my firstborn, was beautiful girl Janice, who just does everything perfectly and was walking and talking and hitting. I mean, she could do it all.
Right.
And I'm waiting for my son. You know, I see all these other guys with their sons at the family games, and Janice could do it all. Now CJ, my first son, got out there, and God, there just wasn't something right.
Right.
And as we got closer and closer to his time to be able to come out for the family games, he wasn't with his age group of kids. CJ was still wandering all over the place, throwing himself on the ground, biting his hand. And boy, it was just a really difficult thing for a father when you're expecting something completely different. My fantasy of what it was going to be. And, you know, I just told you that I just had an awesome trip to Washington, D.C. with him. And just there was so much more growth that I needed to have. It wasn't CJ. It was my ability to be able to accept this beautiful kid for what he is. And God, he just reminds me of how life needs to be really calm and easy.
All right. When we come back, we're going to give you all the information on the Autism Walk coming up April 26th. Jim Gott is with us. Also, Arsenio Hall, Philip, and Andrew Hain as well. It's the Tim Conway Jr. Show live at 97.1 Free FM.
Well, we couldn't get anyone else to show up regularly except him.
That's a great deal.
The Tim Conway Jr. Show on 97.1 SoCal's FM talk station.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show. We're live at 97.1 Free FM. Arsenio Hall joins us.
Hey,
also,
hey.
Jim Gott and Richard and Andrew Hain. They'll all be
Philip.
Out at the Autism Walk.
Hain.
I'm sorry, Philip and Andrew. What did I say, James?
Richard, whatever.
Richard, okay.
I'll be Philip tonight.
All right. But you go to the great website. I just saw this website. It's autismspeaks.org. Autismspeaks.org. And you can, there's an area in there, I guess you can speak more about it here, Philip, where you can sort of self-diagnose or diagnose your kid.
Well, you actually shouldn't self-diagnose. The idea is it's a video glossary.
Right.
The idea is if you suspect that your child may have autism, you can compare the behaviors that your child exhibits with videos on the website to see if they seem to be meeting their milestones or might be a little bit behind if they show some of the signs of autism. But the idea is that if you suspect something, you know, go to a pediatrician and get a medical opinion.
Excellent. Okay.
It's a scary thing.
Yeah,
you know, you don't know as a parent. You're just expecting, like I had said, I had a perfectly developing daughter, and next thing I just expected CJ to be the same. And when it wasn't happening, I was like, oh, well, he has problems with his ears, so we got tubes put in his ears and he'll come around. And then all of a sudden he was colicky for some, you know, he's a boy, he just develops slower. And
or they've got
speech
delays
everything,
or something.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
And Philip, we were talking, isn't there a kit or something that a family can get?
Autism Speaks has a new 100-day kit, and the idea is for parents who have just recently received a diagnosis, it kind of takes them through the first 100 days, because Jim and I can both know when our kids were diagnosed, nobody had a roadmap, anything to do. We're kind of left alone, and now we've put out this kit so parents know what to do, what kinds of therapies to seek, you know, learning about an IEP and all those acronyms you never heard of.
All right, well, go to the website. It's autismspeaks.org, and you'll get all the information there about autism as well as the big walk coming up on April 26th. You had a question for Andrew?
Well, by the way, that walk now for autism.org, they're trying to raise $2 million.
Absolutely.
And we can also go to that, and I think you can find out on that website how to help with the raising of $2
Absolutely.
Million.
You go to the website, and you can register online and start fundraising, build your team. It's great.
And real quickly, I don't know if you know this, but the reason why Arsenio is here tonight is he's going to cut a check for the full $2
million. Isn't that
thank
awesome?
You, thank you.
And you know what? Ignore it down in the bottom right. It says Jay Leno. Sometimes when I sign Arsenio, it looks
also.
Like Jay. You know? Can I ask Andrew a question?
Yeah, we get that.
Go ahead, man.
You know what? I'm a father.
Yes.
And raising a kid has a lot of complications.
What?
One of them, bullies at school. Do you ever have problems with bullies and kids that don't understand you?
I do not have any. And how many kids do you have?
I have one.
What's his or her name?
His name is Arsenio, too. I'm a real creative
Arsenio
guy.
Arsenio, how old is he?
He's 8 years old.
Oh, eight.
No, we're fortunate that Andrew hasn't had any bullying episodes, but it's not uncommon.
I like that Andrew start interviewing me. We might have the next replacement for Jimmy Kimmel.
That's what he would do for a bully, you know? Just say, well, what's your problem? What's happening?
Show me your clip.
Can we show the clip now, please? Yeah. No, I don't think so.
All right, we got to thank Philip and Andrew for coming in. Of course, Jim Gott with the LA Dodgers. You're a major stud, dude, and a great pitcher. And if I was running that team, I'd still have you in uniform, man.
Aww.
Throwing batting practice, it would have to be, or hire me for the other team. Give confidence to our guys.
All right, go to autismspeaks.org, autismspeaks.org. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we have Gina Grad in the with the news. Let's check in with her and see what's happening at the news at 10. What's going on, Gina?
Well, Steve Guttenberg may have a new career in hip-hop, and Hillary Clinton thinks she's Rocky Balboa. This and more coming up at 10.
All right. News with Gina in a couple minutes here. Guys, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
AutismSpeaks.org.
Also, walknowforautism.org to register.
All right. Walknowforautism.org and AutismSpeaks.org.
Say goodnight, Andrew.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks
good
for
night,
coming.
Everybody.
No, Andrew, say goodnight, Andrew.
Good night.
wait, you just say goodnight, Andrew, when I say goodnight, Andrew.
Good night, Andrew.
That's comedy, folks.
All right, gang. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show. Arsenio Hall's with us. We're live on 97.1 Free FM.